This episode of the Citadel Cafe is brought to you by listeners like you. Visit patreon.com/JoelDuggan to find out how you can become a patron and help make this show possible.
This is the Citadel Cafe.
This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 149 for Wednesday, May 27th, 2015. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I hang out to talk about the geeky stuff that we are into. We cover everything from movies and television to books, apps, and websites. Joining me this evening, all the way from the other side of our lovely planet Earth, Paul Fox. Welcome back, sir.
Hello, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, as always.
Now, I'm going to knock on wood. Because before the show, I mentioned how lovely the internet connection was between here, Halifax, Dartmouth, Nova Scotia, and you in Hong Kong, in Tomorrowland, which is a joke I will always make whenever you're on the show. So I apologize for that.
Yes, I come from the future.
You come from the future. So how are things, man? It's been a long time since we've had you on the show.
Yeah, I was looking at the notes from last year, and it's almost been a year to the day since the last time we recorded, and that is the magic of Game of Thrones, bringing us together.
Bringing us together, yeah, yeah. Well, they tear the rest of the world asunder. It brings my friends and I together on the podcast, which is nice. I always try to get kind of the same crew of people in on Game of Thrones, because I know that the people I've had on the Winter is Coming segment before are always passionate about the show. I know they're following. Like, it's not something that people usually have to catch up on. The exception being Brian Dunaway and Hammond Chamberlain this year both caught up within the year on Game of Thrones to be on the show, which was super cool.
Super cool. And that's surprising to hear that Brian Dunaway is caught up on anything.
Yeah. And I apparently he's listening. So because he's excited about this week. But yeah, I was impressed that he watched all that. But I think the other thing too about catching up on Game of Thrones now is it's getting thick, and it's not as easy as just watching the first two or three seasons. It's doable, but like seasons three and four there's a lot of heavy stuff, a lot of new faces and names and places, and it gets really heavy. And I think it's a symptom of the show that we're actually going to talk about a little bit later. We won't get too much into it right now because I can feel the pull of being I can feel the pull of being sucked into the talk about Game of Thrones. Yes. But one thing I wanted to shoot up on the top of the show here quickly, because I don't really have a lot to say about it, especially because I can't without spoiling too much. And it's fairly recent, so I don't want to give too much away. But I did have some opportunity to watch The 100 now that all of my regular shows are over. You know, season finales of Flash and Arrow and Gotham are all over. The 100 is something that I was following on Netflix. I have mentioned it on the show before. I really enjoyed the first season, but I fell off. I thought it was getting kind of dumb. It was getting pretty typical for the teen CW team up drama. Like, there was all the cookie cutter characters were there. There's a couple people where they're like, you know, your reaction is like, oh my god, if you're gonna stare at each other for the rest of the show, like you can just skip this episode and just be done with it. And I thought the writing was getting pretty predictable. It was difficult to get through the first part of season two. However, I really highly recommend sticking it out. I was thoroughly impressed with just the decisions that are being made in this show. You know, I'm going to tie it up with not maybe Walking Dead, but I want to say like Battlestar Galactica, as far as people that you think are going to make it don't. And I'm impressed not only by that, but also how the peril is roped into this show. Because they could have gone really cheesy and really kind of bad excuse writing to get people out of situations, because you're sitting there kind of going, oh God, like this is so unrealistic, because you know, you're just expecting stuff to all work out. And it's really interesting how they handled it. So I can't get into any more detail without spoiling it for people, but just know that the first half of the 100 is kind of boring. There's a lot of character crap that just doesn't need to be there. But then the plot really starts to move forward at about halfway through, right up into the end, to the point where I actually watched like three over the weekend, like one evening, just to kind of kill it, because I really wanted to know what was going to happen next, which is rare for me on a network show. So have you seen it, Paul?
I have not. I've got I have a thing with a lot of TV now, in that I am reluctant to jump into a first season of anything, excuse me, because of cancellation policies and things. And, you know, to speak of this, the show that bears the namesake of your cartoon, right, Star-Crossed, which mm-hmm. Came out last year.
Yeah.
I don't even think it completed a full season. No. I think it got you know, canned like mid-season. Perhaps deservedly so, but I had started watching that, you know, started getting into it a little bit, and then, you know, it ends. And part of the way that the networks run things, in that they, you know, don't order a full complete season, but they'll like give a pilot a go ahead, and then they'll give you a couple episodes before making a final decision. Mm-hmm. It kind of leaves me sour. So with the 100, when it came out, I looked at some early trailers and I thought, okay, I'll wait and see, you know, how it goes. And normally if a show does well and it gets picked up, you know, for a couple more seasons and people, you know, start to generate some buzz, then I'll turn over to it. There are exceptions, of course, you know, a lot of the heavy geek-related stuff, like The Flash, of course, I've watched mm-hmm. week by week, and Game of Thrones and things. But for a lot of the newer titles, where you're not, I'm not really sure what their longevity is going to be, I'm very reluctant to start up with them.
Yeah. Something that I liked about the 100 is that it's a joint venture in terms of its distribution with Netflix. So you can actually watch it without cable. I think it's a couple of days, if not a full week, that the episode shows up on Netflix after airing on TV. And, I mean, I waited until the season was over so that I was able to just watch however many I wanted at a time. If it hadn't have been that accessible, I don't know that I would be going out of my way to to pirate or to find it on like a TV stream site, or go over to a friend's place to watch it or anything like that. But the fact that it was just kind of at my fingertips, it wasn't costing me anything. I was already subscribing to Netflix for a number of other reasons, and it was pretty accessible. So I hear you. It's hard when shows do that. Although I'm curious now that you bring that up, I wonder if the CW pulled it for low ratings, whether Netflix would have posted the rest of the season.
Hmm.
Like if that would have been a safety net, sort of like, well, even though it won't get seen on TV, it'll still get seen, because like everybody and their dogs is watching Netflix these days, right? And I'm just wondering if that's kind of a backup option for shows that are, I mean, based on a book, but pretty unique in terms of their concept. I mean, for those of you that don't know, post-apocalyptic Earth, survivors are in a space station above the planet, and there's 100 delinquents, teenage delinquents, that are sent to Earth in a ship, one, to save oxygen on the space station so that the others can survive, and two, to see if the Earth is survivable from a settling and repopulating sort of standpoint. And they quickly discover that there are still people living on Earth. There's people that have like mutations. There's people that can't be outside in the radiation. There's people called grounders that are very violent. Like there's all these different kind of factions, and it becomes a very kind of multi-political kind of thriller. And there's lots of action, and well done for a TV show with lots of people. Think like Braveheart in terms of like numbers of people in a battle. It's actually pretty impressive that they pulled it off.
Does it break away from the, because I remember when I saw the initial, some of the initial trailers for it, it kind of looked a little bit like Hunger Games-ish. Does it break away from that?
Yeah, it's all pretty, you know, roughage. I mean, they end up living in like crashed spaceships, so it's pretty grungy. I want to say it's probably filmed. It looks like it's probably in like British Columbia. It looks pretty mountainous and very heavy trees in terms of like it's not wide open plains and stuff like that. I was trying to think about how to explain. They're definitely free to roam. Like it's not Hunger Games where they're kind of trapped in, it's not like they were sent to their deaths or it's any kind of game. There's a plot twist every third of a season. Like three times in each season, something changes and develops that really kind of changes the goal of, I mean, everybody's just trying to survive, but how they're doing that changes about three times a season in terms of their overall strategy. Also their location. Like, you know, they might not stay in the same place for very long, or they either have to leave or it gets destroyed. Like, I mean, this is the thing, they make some choices where you kind of look at the place like, oh, okay, well, this is going to be the set for the rest of the season. And sometimes you're wrong. You know, sometimes it's changed dramatically. And there's lots of, you can put it up with any kind of high school drama. People are friends and then they're not friends, and then people are dating and they're not dating. Like there's stuff like that happens. Cause I mean, it's a bunch of, you know, 16 to 20 year olds that are all being sent down to the planet. So, I mean, like it's not the most mature bunch in the world. At the same time, I think part of it, kind of puts you on your heels in thinking that, oh, okay, I know what to expect from this show. And then the kids start making extraordinarily adult decisions that you just don't think that the CW writers are going to do. And that's where it starts to really kind of grab you and say, oh, wait a minute. Okay, I can't predict what this show is going to do half the time. You can the other half, but there's enough kind of surprise and delight happening that it does keep you watching. And I've been wanting something gritty in sci-fi, and it kind of scratches that itch.
So I'll have to check it out.
Good actors in it too. I have to say, like, I mean, it's not like it's not wooden acting from the majority of the cast. A lot of really good people in it. Eliza Taylor is a Australian actor, and she plays Clark, the main character, and she's very good. I really enjoy her. And Bobby Morley plays Bellamy Blake, not the chief delinquent, but he's kind of like the most aggressive as far as the boys are concerned that go down with this with the ship to the surface. So he's someone that's very abrasive at first, but you kind of warm to his character and what his sense of duty is, which is kind of cool. But I was impressed with both of them, and there's lots of great supporting actors as well, and some humor. And the first season has a lot more humor than the second, but it's worth checking out. So what have you been up to besides Game of Thrones? Anything to mention off the top of the show?
It's a golden age for geeks, to be sure. There's so much on TV now and you know, so much going on. It's hard to keep up with everything. So recently I've been binge watching the last book of Legend of Korra.
Oh, nice.
That show, I guess, the season, it had its season or series finale late last year in December, and so now I'm just trying to catch up on that final season. One of my favorite animations to come out in a long, long time. And I've really enjoyed, I kind of held off for a long time because of the bad taste that the Avatar movie left in my mouth. So I didn't finish Last Airbender series for a while after that, but then I went back to it and it was so different and so much better. It got really, really good, and they ended that run and then came out with Legend of Korra, which is a sequel that takes place like some 70 years later. But it's a lot of callbacks to the characters from the old series and just really well written. The animation looks great, and I'm going to start to delve into some of the comics, which fill in the gaps, I guess, between the two shows.
Cool. I've seen the first season and change, so part of season two of Korra, Legend of Korra. I really liked it. I don't remember why I stopped watching. It must have been a time thing, because I just enjoyed it immensely. I think it's just part and parcel of me just not remembering to look it up. Like, it's one of those things about not having cable. If it doesn't come on Netflix, which it hasn't, It might now that it's all finished, because the Avatar The Last Airbender, that's the first series, right?
Yeah.
Right. So that series is all on Netflix, which is how I consumed it the second time. And probably I think finished it. I think I watched the first couple seasons when it was on TV, and then I finished it when it was on Netflix, and I love it. Like you said, it's great. And I really liked Korra, but I don't remember why I didn't continue to download it, but it's fantastic animation, like in terms of the quality, in both the story that they tell, but, a lot of times animation these days on TV, the budget isn't there.
Mm.
You know, to make it really good. But Legend of Korra is crazy. Like the kung fu and the like bending and all the cool stuff that they do, it's really, really good. Yeah, what was your favorite part of kind of like the mythology of Legend of Korra without kind of getting into too many spoilers?
Well, they do a nice job of tapping into a lot of Asian culture and a lot of Chinese culture in some of the art, some of the background. But they set it in, it's kind of like set in, I want to say like a 1920s era. So it's a little bit, if you've seen Avatar was, The Last Airbender was a bit further back. So now they've technologically advanced. So they've got like old jalopy cars, but they've got some steampunk tech. And they merge all this stuff with, the, you know, still that cultural aspect, you know, they mix the bending with, you know, martial arts moves and kung fu and stuff. And it's just a great kind of weird, strange mashup. And the thing that surprises me is that despite all these cultural elements, the show is not popular over here. You can't find it in the DVD shops or anything. They don't run it on TV, which I found extremely surprising. So like you, I've kind of, we don't have Nickelodeon over here. I had to wait until the seasons were up on Amazon and iTunes, and I'm hoping to pick up the Blu-rays when I get back to the States.
Yeah, I would imagine it would look pretty sharp on Blu-ray, especially if they were releasing it in like full 1080 as opposed to 720, which is normally what most cartoons are on TV. I've picked up some DC animated films in 1080p versus the 720 that they're aired. So if you get like the animated DVDs, you can get them in 1080, and even just classical animation, like normally CG, like Pixar stuff looks amazing in HD. I never really paid much attention to what classical animation is going to look like in HD. Cause I don't have any, I don't think I have any Blu-rays that are, traditional animation. So this, would look fantastic in 1080p. I think the Legend of Korra would be great.
The only animations I think I have, I got one of the Snow Whites, maybe I think it was the 50th or one of the anniversary editions that they released on Blu-ray, but I haven't actually watched that one. But the only other ones I have is the later seasons of Futurama when they started releasing those. And so, sometimes I question, it's like, you know, the animation is very simple. Do I really need Blu-ray quality for this? But you know, I don't know. If it's a show I really love, I end up going the Blu-ray route.
Yeah, yeah. And Blu-rays are coming down in price too. Like I picked up a couple Blu-rays around Christmas time for like 10 or 20 bucks. Like 10 bucks. 10 bucks. $10 to $15. And I, you know, Pacific Rim, a couple of other kind of movies that I really like. Not like crazy blockbusters, but like movies that you like and you'd like to have. You can get them on Blu-ray now for pretty cheap. Or, I mean, like depending on where you get them, you can also buy digital versions that are 1080p. You know, and if you've got a system of streaming that at your house, then you're able to do it that way. Something that I've always liked about the Airbender and the Legend of Korra and all that kind of stuff is the comparison that it has to Star Wars and the Force. I like that there's a certain amount of mysticism and they just don't explain it. Like they just leave it up to you as to why someone that can do kung fu can move water or create fire or move the earth or move the wind. It's such a cool idea. And my favorite, I think, from Korra, and this isn't a spoiler because it happens in like the first couple episodes, is earth bending has developed over time now into metal bending because metal is made of minerals from the earth. And man, that's cool. The metal bending is just crazy.
Yeah, it's and they get into some weird variants too that are actually carryovers from the Avatar series, like the blood bending and then a bit later. There's some other like combo elements that they introduce. I won't spoil any.
Yeah.
Because those are a bit later in Korra. But yeah, it's really cool stuff.
I forgot about bloodbending. That was such a key moment of The Last Airbender. I can't believe I forgot about that. Very, very cool. Right on. Well, I guess we can jump right into the Winter is Coming segment this week, because despite not being a super exciting episode, episode 7 does have kind of a lot of stuff to cover. So this week is going to be The Gift, and Paul and I are going to spoil it. So if you have not seen episode 7 of season 5 of Game of Thrones, run away screaming now or forever hold your peace. So as I mentioned, this episode is called The Gift. In this episode, Jon leaves for Hardhome with Tormund Giantsbane with some rangers. Maester Aemon unfortunately dies shortly thereafter. Gilly is attacked by two brothers at the Night's Watch, but Sam comes to her rescue. He is badly beaten, and Gilly tends to him before really tending to him. Sansa asks Reek to help her escape Winterfell, but Reek instead informs Ramby, who flays the old lady whom Sansa had learned the signal from. At the camp of Stannis' army, Melisandre asks permission to sacrifice Shireen. Stannis is disgusted because it's his daughter and refuses. Jorah and Tyrion are sold as slaves. The two are brought to the fighting pits, and after defeating the other slaves, Jorah reveals his identity to Daenerys, who happens to be in the crowd, and is then brought then brings out Tyrion Lannister as a gift for her. Myrcella in Dorne asks Jaime why he has come to rescue her when what she wants is to marry Trystane. Tyrene reveals to Bronn, I can't remember how to pronounce her name. One of the Sand Snakes reveals to Bronn that she poisoned him. She then gives the antidote after he names her the world's most beautiful woman. Olenna is declined by High Sparrow when she demands Loras and Margaery to be released, and later the High Sparrow reveals to Cersei his knowledge of the relationship between her and Lancel, and has her imprisoned. And I was confused as to why the summary included Lancel in that relationship. I thought it was going to be something else. I want to mention right now before I forget, I was talking with my sister earlier, and she said that she wanted me to convey her disgust and disappointment at the anticlimactic capture of Cersei at the end of this episode. She was not overly thrilled with the way that it happened, and I would tend to agree. Like, how did you feel when Cersei got grabbed?
I was kind of expecting it. I kind of knew from the onset of the season that once she started making this deal, it was going to come back to kind of bite her in the butt, literally.
Right.
And so we see this kind of unfold in the final moments of this week's episode. I think there's some subtle nuance to that scene between her and Jonathan Pryce that for me worked okay, in that, you know, as he's slowly unfolding, you know, this story about stripping away the posh and the circumstance of everything and getting down to the core basics. And then you start to see, and he starts to, you know, tell this story, and that she starts to show some recognition in her eyes, and she starts like looking around for kind of a way to escape almost. And then she actually tries, and it doesn't work out for her.
Yeah. I want to know where they found the nuns that look like pro wrestlers.
Yeah. I don't think we've seen them before.
No, they're the Sisters of the Seven, I think is what they're called. And I mean, that I knew it was coming because that's what happens in the books. She gets taken by the sisters. They're not described as being brutish that I remember, but it makes sense that they're kind of, you know, that the bigger of these nuns would be part of the faith militant. They seem completely unimpressed with Cersei and don't consider her to be the queen at all. They all seem to be pretty, what's the word I'm looking for? Like they just, the faith militant seems to just consider themselves above it all. You know, no one can seem to touch them. What I think most viewers were probably expecting was like raiding during the King's Council or in the throne room or during some major event, have the High Sparrow denounce Cersei for her incest to Jaime and the bastard kids. And just take the whole lot of them. Like you kind of expected it to really blow up in her face.
Yeah, and I guess there's kind of a feeling that if this was going to go to trial, that would be like a, you know, you can't handle the truth.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
kind of moment or something.
And we may still get that if they put Cersei on trial. I feel like what people wanted was for her to be embarrassed. Right. And because there was no one but the Sparrow and Lancel in the room, she's furious, but no, she's not embarrassed yet. You know, and I think that that might be something that we're going to see as the rest of the season unfolds, because there still are 3 episodes left. I kind of know where it goes in the books, and I remember it very clearly because it was a specific storyline. So, I mean, I can't really speculate as to what I think is going to happen, but I was hoping for a larger kind of event, and I'm surprised it happened now. I was kind of expecting that to be the end of the season. You know, like there's a few events that I think we're coming up to, and I kind of expected them to be like the 2 or 3 major things that happen in like episode 10, right?
I've read elsewhere online that with regard to the pacing of this season, that there's a theory that they have to push forward to a big battle of some sort, which has been sort of the status quo for the end of each season so far, right?
Right.
A big climactic moment, a big battle. I don't think we had a big battle in season 1, but you know, season 2 at King's Landing. What was season 3? Was that the Red Wedding?
Yeah, Red Wedding.
And then, yeah. And so I think that the speculation is that they're pushing towards this battle, which, as I understand it, because I'm one of these who've not read the books, I'm going in this totally blind, the battle actually hasn't been printed yet. It's like in the forthcoming book or something like this. And I know that some people have said that they're really starting to get into unwritten territory. And perhaps that's part of the reason why this season hasn't worked as well for me as other seasons, in that maybe they're trying to develop things in such a way that they're leading to stuff that actually doesn't have a, you know, a physical form that they can think about and rework and draw from. And it begs the question for me, I mean, are we only getting 7 seasons of this show because there's only supposed to be 7 books? Am I correct in that? That this is a 7 book series?
There's 5 books currently in print. I think there are 2 more coming. I think you're right in that. We are currently kind of in the middle of book 4, sort of. We're kind of in the middle of book 4 and 5 with this season. I think you could get 2 seasons out of these 2 books easily. So I think we're going to be getting probably, I feel like we're going to be getting more than 2 more seasons. Like, I feel like we'll get more than another season. So we'll get season 5, we'll get season 6. I don't know, because at that point they're going to be so caught up to George R.R. Martin that I don't see how they could continue to produce the show. I feel like what they could do is potentially drive book sales. Like, I mean, in order to find out how it ends, you got to read the book as opposed to just watch this last season of the show. Or at the same time, as the book is being written and released, then also do like a feature movie or something like that to
yeah, I've heard up. That heard that rumor too, that yeah. they might go for a film.
Because I've got a funny feeling that however he ends it in the books, it's not going to be something you can really pull off. Unless you make it a film, like, and go for like a film size budget, because you know, I mean, every episode with a dragon in it must cost a lot, you know, or an army. Like, when you've got that many extras and stuff like that, like, that starts to get very complicated and very costly, I'm sure. But I'm with you on the whole kind of season starting to drag. I liked the first half a dozen episodes, or sorry, the first 3, part of the season, but I'm not super happy with the last 2. You know, for sure. The last 2 have kind of been dragging on. And something, I can't remember who it was. I think several people have mentioned it so far this season on the Citadel Cafe, and that is they jump around a lot. You know, it's
Way too much.
Yeah.
Way too much.
You get like a couple minutes in Winterfell, and you get a couple minutes in the Night's Watch, and you get a couple minutes in Dorne, and like you said, you just bounce, 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 bounce. And they're doing that all the while, I don't think we saw, did we see Arya this episode?
No, not at all.
I don't think we did. So, like, they're leaving characters out and still having all the stuff bouncing around. Now, I preferred, I think it was last episode, episode 6, where there was a long time spent with Arya. You know, it was different.
Yeah.
It felt more solid.
They're really, for my taste, they're really juggling a couple too many plots. And it's interesting because part of my problem is that there's one plot I really want to see that we're not going to get at all, which you've already addressed. But just to, as a case in point from this week's episode, you know, you look at the scene with Jaime and his daughter, niece.
Marcella, right? Yeah.
Yeah. It's like one scene. I mean, this is the scene we get after the events of last week when they got captured and apprehended. And it's just one scene of him and her in the room, and it's like, you know, a father-daughter, not-daughter scene, you mm-hmm. know, because she's like, why are you here? You know, I don't want you to be here. I want to get married. You're my uncle. What do you have to say about this anyway, right?
Yeah.
And he's kind of like, no, you're my daughter, you know, the way he's, like, looking at her.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting scene, but it's like, all right, but, you know, shouldn't he be, like, confronted with Dr. Bashir? I mean, Sigurd El-Fadil, his, you know, the actor who plays the king.
Yeah.
You know, shouldn't they be having this, like, political moment to, you know, oh, we're going to hold you hostage? Or, you know, we don't get any of that. And so it's like, all right, yeah, that was kind of an important scene, but was it really? I mean, in the scope of stuff that's going on, couldn't we have had more time with them? You know, I just think that the pacing of what they're doing in the jumping around, it's like they're giving us little bits, but not enough. And it's leaving me kind of unsatisfied.
Yeah, there's lots of questions. Like, why is Bronn in the dungeon and Jaime's sitting in a pretty comfortable room with sunshine and good clothes? I mean, he's killed people. You know, like, he's stolen horses. He's broken in and tried to kidnap Marcella. Like, it's, you know, there's a lot of stuff where he should be at least in some sort of political trouble. You know, I agree, like, you need that confrontation with the prince where the prince then kind of does a little monologue and explains to us why Jaime isn't locked in a dungeon, you know, like, you know, be only because of your stature or something. Like, you just need a little bit more. There seems to also be a reputation ahead of Jaime. They knew who he was last week when they captured him, and they don't address that at all either. I'm disappointed with that, like, the lack of information there, and then the extended kind of bits that we got at Night's Watch, with Sam and Gilly. Like, I didn't care. Like, it was just really long. The scene where the two brothers attack her, and then she tends to Sam after he's been beaten up. Like, just none of it really affects the story. Like, the Maester Aemon passing was important because he's talking about Rhaegar, his little brother, and how that relates to him being a king. It's a nice reminder when Aemon passes away that he's a Targaryen, that he is Daenerys' last living relative. You know, like, I mean, that was important. But all the other stuff that happened at the Wall outside of Jon leaving was really unimportant.
Yeah, it's that sequence in particular. I mean, it started out okay, but part of it in my mind was we've moved from the very hot topic of last week's ending, which we don't need to get back into, to this. And, you know, it's another loved character getting brutalized, not in the same way, but it's still a very, very, you know, brutal and violent scene. And, you know, for me, moving from that to this was, it was almost, in a sense, I started thinking, are they really becoming like The Walking Dead here, where it's, you know, you're just waiting for the next shoe to drop, for the next character that you like to get brutalized in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
And then, of course, in that scene, the hero of that moment, which we kind of expect to be Sam for a second, but then no, you know, Ghost comes in. Mm-hmm. But that leads me to question, okay, all right, now is he going to be on the chopping block?
Right.
Because they need to get him out of the way. And then, yeah, they get into this scene, which I think was intended to be kind of tender and, you know, in I guess romantic as you can be in Game of Thrones. It was really, really just way too long. And even my wife, you know, who loves the show, she's sitting there and she just, you know, comments to me, is this going on too long? And when my wife says something, then I know it's really, because she rarely comments during watching anything. And if she commented about it, then, it, you know, it really stuck in my mind that, yeah, they kind of took that a little bit, you know, too far.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, really all she had to do was just kiss him, because other than that, they haven't had any real affection. I mean, he saved her. We know he's sweet on her. But, you know, Sam and Gilly, you don't necessarily have to show them sleeping with one another, you know, like it was. Yeah. I mean, there was a small comedic moment when, you know, they actually do sleep together, which is obviously Sam's first time. So, you know, hey, go Sam. But, you know, and his reaction was pretty priceless. But I don't remember exactly what he said. It was more how he said it, because he kind of whimpers. Yeah. It was pretty funny.
Well, he is the avatar for nerds across the world, right?
Yeah. He's the bookworm. Yeah. He's the comic book nerd of Game of Thrones, because of all the stuff that he's read for the.
You can see him waking up the next day and just going, best night ever or something, right?
yeah. Skipping across the battlements, right? It happens in the books, like they get together in the books. I mean, no giant spoiler there. But it happens very differently under very different circumstances. And I think that it was better in the books, to be all nerd rage on the show, but I think they'd had a better opportunity to do it in the books. I feel like they are moving at a racing car pace through some of the content. Like they are pushing events up way sooner than I expected. And then at the same time, other events, I feel like they're aiming for, only because of their gravity, they're now kind of scheduling them into like season enders, because they're important, and it's the kind of the best way. Like you said, that the show has to end on a giant kind of kaboom, right? And I don't know. I'm not entirely convinced. I always walk away from each season of Game of Thrones being satisfied. Like I remember, I'm sure several times we complain about how slow it gets kind of mid-season. It seems to be kind of a par for the course. But I think the other issue is that, as Michael Day pointed out in the chat room, this show is just viscous now. Like it's there's so much. I know both my mom and my sister messaged me today, individually to say that they're watching it a second time to get it all straight.
Yeah.
You know,
there's a lot of moments that can be easily missed again, because they're bouncing around to you know so many different places. I mean, just in this week, we were at the Wall, we were at Winterfell, back down at Meereen, over at Dorne, King's Landing. Mm-hmm. I don't even think we saw, except for a brief moment, Brienne, and because she's near Winterfell, but she's not at Winterfell. And then you've got, of course, The one storyline which we're not going to get at all this season, which I'm very disappointed about, but I understand, is Bran, you know, because,
yeah,
you know, he had very exciting things happening at the end of last season, just blowing my mind, and then just to not even, know any of what's going on with him. But of course, but what I've been told is that this is the same state of affairs in the books, that there's really nothing written about him beyond that book-wise either. So that's all, I guess, unscripted territory.
Yeah, it's the same for several characters in book four. Like, you leave and you eventually return to, you know, characters, but some of the characters that you're really interested in where they're going, you just don't hear mention of for an entire book, and it's extraordinarily frustrating. And then hard in book five when you return to them to reacquaint yourself and catch up with them and fill in the gaps as to like how long have you been away, because the events are all happening at the same time in book four and five, but having read a book between three and five, you feel as if there's been a lot of time, right? But
part of me wonders too, I mean, I know this is super wishful thinking, but how great would it be if they took a sort of Arrow and Flash approach to this, you know, that they split it into two different shows where like everything that's happening over down in, you know, Dorne Marine is one show. Everything that's happening over King's Landing, Winterfell is another show. And then you have crossover maybe for season finales or something like that.
That would be really cool.
But I don't think they're going to do that. But one thing I really wish they would do is consider extending the season, because I think that would help. If they were a 13-episode season instead of, say, a 10-episode season, I think that it would maybe address some of the problems where people have commented that they feel that they're rushing things, or, as we pointed out today, that they're kind of not spending enough time with some characters before jumping over to others.
Yeah. How would you feel about the extreme opposite in terms of them jumping around? Maybe not having just one episode per season per character, but in the books, chapters are broken up by character. So, you know, you see a chunk of time through Cersei's eyes, and then you see a chunk of time through Arya's eyes, etc. What would you say if, like, we got, like, an Arya episode, where outside of maybe some important related events, you know, at the beginning, maybe the end, but the whole thing would just be like an Arya episode, if they had enough content to kind of make it an interesting hour-long show, like rather than just like her walking around and looking and being silent or whatever, but actually having some important things happen. And then like the next character would be like maybe the next people would be like Jorah and Tyrion, because they're in the same continent, and maybe something that Arya did would kind of lead her up to, you know, the slave, like the slave pens and then the fighting arenas. And then we pick up with then Tyrion and Jorah for like a whole episode. We got a fair amount of Tyrion and Jorah this time around, but would you think that would be better to go kind of like,
I don't know if I'd say focus of, because we've had a couple, like, finale of, was it, season two was like the whole episode of the battle at King's Landing. And then last season, I think it was not the final episode, but the episode before, where we have the battle at the wall, where the whole episode takes place there. I think those work in terms of, you know, the position they have in the season, but I don't know if we like had episode two was all about Arya. I think that might leave some people cold, but if you maybe made it like a half and half, where you show like half of the episode is Arya doing certain things, and then half of the episode maybe is Brienne, and there's some parallel between, you know, what those two characters are going through.
Yeah.
And then the next episode, it's Jaime and, you know, maybe Tyrion or something. Mm-hmm. Maybe that might be a little bit better in terms of some of the structure.
Yeah, like break it
at
up.
At least for this season. I haven't really felt this in the previous seasons. We went back and because my wife hadn't watched them before, because for her, I wanted to introduce the show to her with the option of Chinese subtitles, because my wife is Chinese. She's got great English, but sometimes, especially on these shows where they use a lot of dialectical language or specialized language or
made, you know,
family names
stuff,
or things,
yeah,
she has a bit of a hard time following, and she can kind of zone out. So they've released the seasons over here on DVD, so I got all the... I knew after last season with the big battle at the wall and everything, I said, okay, now is the time to kind of introduce her to the show. So we like screamed through all of the seasons at the start of the year, and she loved it. She was hooked like right from the get-go. And she loved it so much that now she's like, well, I don't want to wait for the DVD. I want to watch in you know, real time, and you just explain things to me if I don't understand. And I'm like, okay. So yeah, we got caught up, and she's been following along with me now, and you know, she really loves it. And going back and looking at them again, even season two, which for me was the weakest season so far, maybe still stronger than this season. I'm not sure. My vote's not in on this season because it's not finished yet. But even going back and looking at them, the pacing overall, I think, has been very, very good in terms of the storytelling, the time spent with each character before moving on to another character, compared with this season where I think it's been a little bit off.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like in previous seasons, you would see kind of like you'd hear the music swelling and you'd be like, no, 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 they're going to end. We don't know. Yeah. Like, there's too many questions. And the episode would be over and you're just like, God damn it, I have to wait till next week. And then on this episode in particular, every time they faded to black in the last 15 minutes, it was like, is it over yet? Is it over yet now? Like, are we done? Like, it really kind of felt like there's like, and scene again. And it goes on and on and on. I'm wondering how they can fix it. And I don't know how to do it because, as Mike's pointing out in the chat room, like, book four dragged. Like, it's they're getting to the draggy part of the books. And I imagine that it's probably a pretty big challenge for them to try and stay true to the story, because there's important stuff that happens, you know, like the stuff in Dorne is important, like the stuff in King's Landing is important with Cersei. The stuff that's happening with Daenerys is important, but also you're getting it in really tiny bits. I really enjoyed, just to kind of put some positive stuff out there, like I really enjoyed the scene between Hisdar Zolorek, is that his name? Or Dario Naharis. Who's the guy that's sleeping with Dany?
That's Dario.
Dario. So their kind of pillow talk I thought was great. It was good character development. It was nice to see Daenerys smile. Like, it was, you sort of have the queen kind of veil pulled away for a minute and you get Daenerys and Dario, you know? And I thought that was really kind of cool character development too. Compared to the other very formal stuff. And you can tell too, like with her body language, like when she's at the fighting pits, like she's very stiff. You know, I mean, obviously she's not happy to see Jorah, but it was a very different scene and I liked it. I wish we had more kind of non-staged stuff, I guess, going on with characters. Like, I'd like to see, Cersei is just always on with a forked tongue. Like, just, it's always, always, always. Another good scene like that, which I think you might have something to say about, was Olenna and the Sparrow. The High Sparrow.
Yeah, Jonathan Pryce.
Yeah.
They're great. I mean, they're both, they've both been around for a long, long time. They're great character actors, and put them in a room together and just, you know, let them chew each other up. It was just great to see.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, to be fair, this season's had some really great character moments. I've really been digging the Arya storyline. You know, it's like every week I want to see, if I'm not going to get any stuff from Bran, I want to see more of what's going on with her. Whereas, you know, with Sansa, it's like the way they were showing her at the start of the season, I was like, this is a more mature Sansa. She seems to be a little bit more cunning now. You know, she seems like she's learned some of the ropes, but now it's like they've just beaten that all out of her. And she's just back to being, you know, victimized again. I did read elsewhere, you know, they kind of said, well, she did get a couple shots in at Ramsay when there was talk about the heir, but I didn't see that as overly significant. And part of the problem, I think, for me with that whole storyline is the Ramsay character, who has been basically put in a position to out Joffrey. Right, we no longer have Joffrey as the big bad, and he has, you know, basically Ramsay has been thrust in that place to try and be even worse. My problem is that Joffrey, as much as I hated him, was such a cleverly nuanced character that, you know, the way that we see him grow from the very first season to the very final, his very final moments, you know, we see him go through this progression as he becomes more and more brutal. And his brutality wasn't always so visual. You know, it was often implied brutality. And I really, you know, appreciated that out of the character. But now that we don't have him, now we've got Ramsay, who is just simply like a blunt instrument. You know, he's just there to you know, basically beat characters down through showing, you know, I'm going to, you know, cut off Theon's, you know, thing. I'm going to, you know, skin people alive and put them on display. And I think it's, you know, it's for me, he doesn't work anywhere near as well as Joffrey did. And I just kind of want to move beyond him. I want, you know, I guess the big bad we can say for last season was, of course, the name escapes me. The Joffrey's grandfather.
Tywin.
Tywin, yes. You know, and he was a very different animal as sort of a big bad. You know, and he was great. And so here, I just feel a little bit disappointed with that. And I'm very curious to see how that's going to play out. I guess you maybe know a little bit more having read the books, but my expectation is based on what we saw between Stannis and the Red Queen, the Red Woman, not the Red Queen, sorry, Alice in Wonderland, the Red Woman, I'm wondering if there's a betrayal in the works because she didn't get her way. Yeah. She did say she had a vision of herself on Winterfell, and she seems to be all about King's blood. So is there a chance that she may, you know, just betray Stannis, get his blood, and then switch sides at some point? I say this not having read the books. That's just a vibe I was getting out of this episode. Yeah. I could be completely off.
And Melisandre, the Red Woman, is very hard to put a finger on. Like, she's very hard to figure out, no matter what you're doing, reading the books or watching the show, or both. The reaction that she has in Stannis' tent this week kind of harkens back to how she was approaching Jon last week when she basically tried to sleep with him in his study. And, you know, at first, like that episode, you're thinking, oh, she's trying to manipulate Jon to kind of get for Stannis' gain. But now you're like, was it for Stannis' gain or was it for her gain? You know, like now you're kind of wondering, like, wait a minute, like, is she all for herself or is she all for Stannis? Like, she talks a lot about like uniting the kingdom and surviving the winter, but I'm not sure. Like, we know she's magic. Like, I mean, I don't know. I'm not sure how much peril she's really in. You know, it's an interesting. Change like turn of events with the disagreement between her and Stannis.
Yeah, and I'll be interested to see how that plays out. I haven't really Stannis has not been a character that I've really liked or cared for until this season when he started actually showing a bit of affection for his daughter.
Yeah, agreed.
And so now it's like, oh, okay, father-daughter time. That's something I can relate to. So maybe I don't want him to perish suddenly. But yeah, one of the other scenes too that kind of, you know, I know why it's there, but it was a scene that I thought didn't really add much value to anything in terms of the overall show was the sexy time scene we get down in the dungeon
between
Bronn and the Sand Snake. I mean, yeah. I know that this was a big thing that was talked about at the end of last week's episode because of the song he was singing and that he didn't get to finish and then that very purposeful shot of him getting, you know, slightly slashed. So a lot of people predicted that what was going to happen to him happened. But the whole kind of lingering, you know, striptease, I'm just like, okay, all right, they're not going to kill him off. Are they? Are they going to kill him off? Okay, well, let's just do it and get done or let's save him and get done. And then, you know, it kind of played out and then I was like, okay, you know, they had their sexy time quota for the week, I guess.
Yeah, and I don't understand the whole device. Like, I mean, if she poisoned him, why didn't she just let him die?
Like, because she liked him at last, I guess. Maybe she liked his singing or something.
I'm not really sure how her. Like, it's hard to pin. Like, with the character, the I can't remember her name, Tyene or something.
Tyene, yeah.
Yeah. You don't know whether she's just crazy, like Harley Quinn crazy, like tell me I'm beautiful and I won't bash your face in, you know, like, you know, it's that, you know, like, you don't know whether she's that kind of off the rocker or whether culturally, like, is she insecure or is she batshit, right? Like, you know, you can't really figure out which I guess maybe kind of makes her dangerous. I don't really know. I don't find her very, it wasn't very convincing in terms of her controlling him, because I mean, like, we all know how many women he's been with. It's not like he's never seen a pair of boobs before, you know. And not to mention that she's on the other side of two sets of bars. It's not, you know, I could see maybe a little manipulation if she happens to be sitting on his lap, but I don't know. I had more respect for Bronn until that scene because he wasn't feeling the effects of the poison when he first started like bubbling his words, like, you know, mm-hmm. he was just like, oh, naked girl, blah, 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 you know, like, come on, dude, like, grow a pair. Is it, yeah, it wasn't very convincing.
Maybe she threw in some Viagra with the poison.
Well, that's one thing that I was thinking, as that scene was happening, I was like, man, this is really, they're focusing on this an awful lot. And I'm wondering if the poison that she gave him, because it was a slow release, whether she was trying to get his heart rate up and whether that was accelerating the poison. I'm just giving it too much credit. Like, I don't know if they thought that scene through that far. And I don't recall any of that from the book. Like, I don't remember at all what happens to Bronn. Like, I don't recall it in the very least.
I think it's more likely that the HBO writers were getting their own blood pumping when they end out the scene.
Yeah.
And, you know, end it out.
She is a very attractive actress. I'm not gonna, you know, I'm okay with boob quota. Like, that's fine by me. Any final thoughts while we wrap up this episode?
No, I was, the one thing that got me to do a little bit of digging was in the scene that we mentioned before where Ghost comes in to save Sam. And now my thoughts are, okay, is Ghost going to be on the chopping block in the next episode? And then I started thinking, okay, well, how many wolves are left and how many Stark children are left? And then I really realized, okay, we've only actually lost one of the Stark children, that being Robb, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody else is still alive. Sansa's there. Rickon's there, but we don't know where, you know, he's at. Bran, mm-hmm. we know where we left off last summer. Arya is around and Jon's around. So what about their wolves? Well, Arya's wolf, Nymeria, ran off when she, you know, back early on, she told her to go. I guess Shaggy Dog is still with Rickon, right?
Yes.
And Grey Wind was killed during the Red Wedding, and Lady was killed back in season one.
Yeah, Lady was the first one to die.
You still got, four of the wolves with one, you know, the status, I guess, being unknown. I'm curious to know if we are going to, you know, if there's a chance that in some future date that Arya and Nymeria will ever have a reunion. But yeah, if they do something to Ghost, I'm going to be mad.
Yeah. I really like Ghost too.
And it didn't make sense. I didn't understand why John's heading back north.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm thinking I'm going back north, White Walkers, all kinds of dangers. I'm going to take my trusty direwolf with me. My direwolf's from the north, you know.
Yep.
Did I miss a scene where he said he was going to leave Ghost to protect Sam or something?
I didn't recall anything like that. You would think that there would be a scene where he would say, no, Ghost, you stay here. You know, like, because Ghost would probably want to follow him. That or, I'm trying to recall, because I only watched the episode once. I'm trying to recall whether that happened before or after we watched John leave. Right?
I think it was after, because there was a scene, it was also after the funeral, because there was a scene where the now first ranger guy, who was the former Lord Commander, what's his name?
Not
Mormont, the guy that is a jerk.
Yeah.
But he said, he made a comment to Sam that, you know, all his friends are leaving. Which was, you know, and then we get the scene after of the near rape scene. And so it's like, all right, you know, you're kind of a jerk. I mean, it's, you know, you're gonna let this guy know he's got something coming, and, you know, not gonna be very noble of you to, you know, take up a leadership role being while John's away and be an actual leader. But I guess that's the nature of his character.
Yeah. Yeah, I think my favorite scenes from this particular episode were like the subtle character development with Daenerys and Dario. I kind of like that we got Tyrion and Daenerys to meet one another. Like that.
I did too. I thought it was I was saying to myself, because they kept talking about some grand games and like, okay, well, you got to fight this fight and then next week you get to fight the grand games in front of the queen. I'm like, all right, so we're going to get a couple weeks of gladiator action, right?
Right.
But then it's like, so, no, suddenly she's here and they're together. So I think some people felt that that was a bit rushed, and I can understand that feeling, because I was expecting, you know, their period of slavedom to be a little bit longer.
Yeah.
But I guess they're trying to move things forward, because we only have, you know, three more episodes, and I, you know, this is when the big stuff is supposed to, you know, to come about. The big thing that I have noticed, though, is winter is here. You know, all the scenes that fell, like lots of snow, heavy snow. I'm really getting a sense that winter has finally arrived. So I'm wondering if this is just a freak snowstorm and they're going to pull things back a little bit, or if this is what we can expect in, you know, the shots of the north from here on out.
Yeah, you know, and Stannis reminded everybody they don't know how many years this winter is going to last. And in Westeros, summer and winter are year-long events. It's not like you get summer and winter each year. They're really long events, which I think is a good point to remind everybody, because they haven't mentioned it in a long time, which I thought was kind of a nice nod to, I think season one was the last. And thanks to Michael Day in the chat room, Alistair Thorne is the name of Jerkface at the wall.
The thorn in the side of everybody.
Yeah, yeah. I probably... probably where he got his name. It's speculation, folks. I don't know for sure. If you would like to join us live in the chat room, though, thecitadelcafe.com/live every Wednesday at 9 p.m. Atlantic, 8 p.m. Eastern. Come on and hang out and help us remember the names to all the freaking people in the show. Well, we're going to wrap up with the Internet Minute, and it is, of course, brought to you by Tweaked Audio. You can go to tweakedaudio.com for high-performance, noise-reducing earbuds. Use the code TCC at checkout for free shipping and 30% off your entire order. That's tweakedaudio.com, and use the code TCC. I'm going to start off with a quick article that was actually on CBC this morning, and I thought it was the coolest thing that I have read online in a long time. Nell creator Tom Mitchell has received an honorary degree from Dalhousie University here in Halifax, because he is the creator of a computer that learns like a person does. The article will go into much better detail as to explaining this than I can, but essentially what he's created is an artificial intelligence in a computer that reads the internet and then kind of crowdsources the answers to things via Twitter when it tries to kind of when it finds enough similarities, you know, when it realizes that McDonald's and food are mentioned in enough places and enough times, it realizes that McDonald's is where people go for food. And it, you know, will associate certain words with how they're associated online. And there was some really interesting stuff where apparently there was an error where it associated cookies with baked goods, which was correct. But then it started associating internet cookies with baked goods, which was not correct. So then it started associating a lot of incorrect tech terms with baked goods. And so it went to Twitter and said, like, hey, are these kind of cookies baked goods? And so you have to, you know, it relies on people to say, no, that's not right now. You get it backwards. And I just thought it was, I didn't realize, like, I know that we've got a lot of people working on AI and a lot of kind of programs out there. What's the one from IBM right now? Winston?
The one that went on Jeopardy?
Yeah. What's it called? Isaac? No, Winston. I don't remember what it's called. But there's it's been in the news. I mean, there's lots of robots out there now. But I just thought that this was such a neat idea, kind of a fun story, you know, tied here into Halifax. He's originally from the University of Pittsburgh. I'm having trouble with my internet right now. It's not opening up the page. But it's a really cool article. It's a quick read, and just kind of opens your eyes to the kind of things that people are doing with the computing power that is available today. You know, really good example. One of the questions that Nell would ask is, true or false, Wonka candy bars is a kind of candy. You know, so that's the kind of statements it's coming out with, and relying on kind of social media and the internet to kind of help it sort it out. But it's...
You know how we're going to beat this thing? Is that Wonka doesn't actually exist, so those candy bars don't actually exist. Mm-hmm. So it's a very philosophical thing, and it gets caught in a logic loop and explodes.
Watson is the name of the computer that was on Jeopardy. Not Winston. Sorry, Watson. Why didn't I think about that? Sherlock Holmes. Makes a lot more sense. The thing that I think is so neat is that it answers questions, and the idea is that eventually... you as a professional could have Nell as like a digital reader. You know, you need to know everything about this particular law in this particular county because you need to use it in court for something. And Nell will go out and read like everything it can find and then give you a summary pros, the cons, and kind of bring you up to speed on the thing that you wanted it to learn. And that's what this guy's goal is. We've got a lot of kind of personal assistants, I guess, for visual stuff or for other things. And this guy wanted to have like a personal reader. I'm trying to remember what he compared it to. I think it wasn't compared to Google. It was compared to something else. Maybe Yahoo Answers. I can't remember how it happened. But the article's worth reading and such a neat, I guess, development that I really didn't hear anything about until just today. And it's been on for 5 years. Like, who knew?
Yeah. And for people who want to write in, I do know that Wonka does actually make candy. So. I've had nerds before, so yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting thing to be sure, but I think I'll be building a statue to Mr. Mitchell once the robot uprising takes place and we're all dominated and subservient because of his creation.
So what about you? What's your pick this week?
My pick is a very simple one. Again, kind of going back to animation, big fan of How to Train Your Dragon. The new series is going to be premiering on June 26th next month. This is called Dragon's Race to the Edge. And I've just put a link up for the trailer for that series, teaser trailer for that series. So you can take a look at that. And if you're a fan of the series or the movies at all, take a look. My understanding, though, is that it takes place before How to Train Your Dragon 2, the movie. So we won't be seeing the dragons that were introduced in that movie or some of the characters who were new introductions to that movie, who I won't say here for spoiler reasons. Since I just found that out, I was kind of a little disappointed because I have loved the series itself, and I was hoping that this would be a sequel to the movie and it would kind of take some of the movie further. But apparently it serves as a bridge between the last season and the second movie, so I'm still interested to see it. The difference is that this time it's all going up on Netflix, so the whole season should be available, you know, a la Daredevil and other Netflix shows right from the start.
My friend John Sanford is the director, or one of the directors, on the first season of How to Train Your Dragon.
Which are really good in terms of shows that carry over from films in terms of animation quality and things. I think that the Kung Fu Panda Legends of Awesomeness and How to Train Your Dragon are two of the best.
Yeah, DreamWorks
I've been a bit disappointed with like the Penguin series and some of the other spin-off shows in terms of the quality, but the Dragons one and the Kung Fu Panda one have been really great.
Yeah, I saw the trailer that you posted in the notes before the show tonight, and I mean it looks really close to the movies, and obviously they have to pull it back because the production time and rendering time on films these days for CG is just ridiculous. Like, it's just, you just can't do it on a television schedule. But it seemed like it was pretty true to like the sense of it all. Like the
character designs look a little closer. I mean, when I looked, when you see their designs from the end of the last season and the designs from the movie, there's kind of a big jump in that the characters are much more mature. Mm-hmm. They have a little bit more facial hair. So when you look at the trailer here, as sort of the in-between between those two, you can see kind of the transition between those two. The characters are a little bit bigger.
Right.
The designs are a little bit tighter and a little bit closer to the second movie. So it really looks well done. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, no, I think it looks good too. I what I noticed was the backgrounds. Like, the backgrounds look a little bit more cartoony. But I would imagine like that's where they're saving a lot of rendering time and stuff like that. So forgive me if I'm a little ignorant here. Is Dragon Racers, is that the first season or is that something else entirely?
No, I'm not sure what Dragon Racers is. Because I saw that come up during when I was looking for the search. I'm not sure if that was the early working title for this or if that's a fan thing or what that is or maybe...
I might
web
be getting
episodes or something.
Yeah, and I might be getting a different title here in Canada too, because that might be a thing. Because I know that's happened overseas, and then like you might just get How to Train Your Dragon the series, whereas in North America it might be named, it might have like a subtitle.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Well, I know on Facebook. Funny enough, like right after you posted this in the notes, I saw it on Facebook, and it was like an ad that was like, it had a timeline and it showed where in the timeline between previous seasons and the second movie where this one falls.
Yeah.
So I think maybe, because, and there was four or five marks on the timeline, so you might be right. There might be like webisodes or just for Netflix stuff.
You've got the first film. There's season one and season two, which are named two different things. One is Dragons Riders of Berk, and then season two is Dragons Defenders of Berk.
Mm.
And then there'll be this show, and then there's the second Dragons movie, How to Train Your Dragon 2.
Yeah, which everybody should watch. Both How to Train Your Dragon 1 and 2 are on Netflix in Canada right now, and they're both fantastic. I own both on Blu-ray. They're amazing. Well, that brings us to the end of this episode of the Citadel Cafe. We record live every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern on the citadelcafe.com/live. Our mobile audio stream is provided by Alpha Geek Radio. Go to tunein.alphageekradio.com to find out how you can listen on your favorite audio device. For the Citadel Cafe, choose Channel 1 at Showtime. Music for the show was composed by Kevin MacLeod, and this episode will be available on demand and via iTunes and our website on thecitadelcafe.com. Contact the show at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com, and of course, find us by name on Twitter and Facebook. My name is Joel Duggan. You can find everything that I am up to online at joelduggan.com. A big thank you, as always, to our 17 supporters on Patreon, supporters like Jules Faulkner. She is a fellow cartoonist, a friend of mine from Ontario, and she is kind enough to help us make this show, as well as supporting my webcomic, Starcrossed. Check out what Jules is up to on her own Patreon at patreon.com/JR Faulkner. That's FAULKNER. She's doing a comic called Knight and Dave, and it's beautifully drawn. And if you become a patron, you get to see all kinds of really cool behind-the-scenes stuff as to how she makes a comic page, comic resources for being a web cartoonist. It's very, very helpful. So go check out Jules' work at patreon.com/JR Faulkner. For as little as $1 a month, you can support Jules, you can support me, you can support any creator that you want on Patreon. It's a great system to help you become a patron of the arts that you enjoy. So for the Citadel Cafe and Starcrossed, as little as $1 a month goes a long way to help me make some really cool stuff for you guys. You'll also get access to my Patreon-only feed, which is where I put some fun rewards for you guys. The next milestone goal is $150 a month, where I will be redesigning the Starcrossed website to make it super cool and responsive and up to snuff. You can follow me on Twitter with just my name, Joel Duggan. Paul, where can people find you online?
You can find me also on Twitter at FoxLore, and I post there occasionally geeky stuff. If you are interested at all in Asian cinema, Hong Kong cinema, Chinese cinema, you can look me up for my podcast over at KongCast.com. That's KongCast.com. We do a show there called East Screen, West Screen, where we used to talk about films from both Hong Kong and Hollywood, but since the reboot of the show, we've focused primarily on Hong Kong and Chinese cinema.
Very, very cool. I have to confess I haven't listened because I don't watch a lot of Hong Kong cinema, but sometime in the future when we don't have a big Game of Thrones episode, I have watched a lot of Ip Man stuff on Netflix, and I'd love to kind of get your kind of feedback and like kind of bring me up to speed on all the stuff that I'm missing, because I feel like I'm out of the loop, but I enjoy them, but I have no idea where
Ip Man 3 in production now with Mike Tyson as the big bad guy.
Oh, believe joy. Or maybe I should say, oh, joy.
Yeah. Hey, that was pretty good.
Thanks. You've been listening to the Citadel Cafe, where we're fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two. Just don't bite me on the ear.